Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. The hat says so. The sign out on the lawn's about to change a little bit. We have the WNST hat, the Baltimore Positive hat, but always the Taharka ice cream. I like going back to the old labels. Chocolate Love, made in Baltimore, just like Baltimore Positive is. Don Moeller is here, and we have a very special guest that we're going to – I wish we could go down to Fadley's and get a crab cake with this guy. I wish we could go over to State Fair, maybe get some shrimp and grits or chicken and waffles, or maybe it's a club sandwich or some crab soup as well. We'll get to that. And one last sponsor I got to give a shout-out to, Moeller and Gary Realty. Don, you'll be happy to know my wife and I are thinking about putting the house on the market. We'll talk to Jeff about that. Donnie,
there you go.
There's been twice in 2 years since we started Baltimore Positive that you're like – get me a sports guest. And I'm not the producer of the program. We're now Baltimore's best conversation, according to the Baltimore's magazine, because Don books all the guests. And when it's sports, when it's Cal Ripken or Dick Cass or Ken Singleton, I get the honors of booking the guests. So, Don, I want you to do the honors of welcoming the great Ken Singleton.
Well, it is the great Ken Singleton. I told Ken off the air before we came on, my wife is very jealous today. She loves her O's, and she has two all-time favorite Orioles, Ken Singleton and Eddie Murray. So she's a bit jealous this morning. Kenny, thank you.
Well, tell her I said hello.
I will. You know, Nestor, I don't think you know this story, and Kenny certainly won't remember it, but I always filed it away. There was a long-time banquet in the state that was held every year, the Topson Sports Banquet.
Yeah. Frank Slifka's event, by the way. Yep.
Frank Slifka's event. And it was a terrific event. My brother happened to be in the liquor industry at that time and usually got a table, and we all went, and it was wonderful. And I won't belabor the story, but I think this says all that we need to know about Ken Singleton. So my son at the time was a fanatical Little League baseball player. Loved the Orioles. Now I'm doing it again with my grandchildren, Kenny. And Ken, you were there, and I walked over, and you were just standing there, and I said, hey, Ken, I don't want to take you away from everything that's going on, but I just want to thank you for being the kind of role model that my son as a little leaguer can look up to and show him how the game should be played, but more importantly, how you should treat people. And as a dad, I want to thank – and I started to walk away. And Nestor, Ken stopped me. He said, wait a minute. He said, no, you got it backwards. I want to thank you for coming up and sharing that. And I thought, oh, that's okay. That's a different level. And I've never forgotten it, Ken. And to me, it just speaks volumes as to the kind of guy you are. So it's a pleasure.
Thank you, Don. It's very kind of you to say those words. But it all started with my parents, to be honest with you. You know, they taught me. I grew up in New York, and of course, New York is a very diverse place. And you learn to get along with all types of people, all kinds of people. And I felt very fortunate that I grew up in that area because I learned all types of cultures and everything. And so when I went around the country to play baseball, I can remember my dad's words when I first signed the contract. He said, remember, I signed with the Mets organization. They drafted me. And he said, remember, you're from New York. You're just trying to get back here. And, you know, those words were kind of true. You know, he said, you've seen a lot already. And I was only 19 years old. But it's a big country. And you get to experience a lot of things traveling all over the United States and eventually into Canada as well. I miss my parents a lot. You know, now that I'm a grandparent, I try and pass those, ways of thinking along to my grandkids as well. So I shout out to my folks, and I really miss them.
Well, Kenny, where we are in America with baseball and with race, and Doc Rivers' name is going to come up in this because I think that's pretty much what led to the phone call. Because, I mean, you've been gracious enough to come on 3, 4, 5 times a year, every couple months. Mm-hmm. You visit, you still live here in Baltimore, but what are you learning? We talk about learning things every day, and obviously the election season and how this has become all intertwined in Kenosha with the president and sports. And you know, for a long, long time, people didn't know my politics or didn't care much my politics or social media or whatever. And I had to stick to sports, right? And you've been on the Yes Network since you've left here. You're a broadcaster. Stick to sports. Stick to sports. You know, that ship has sailed, I think, Kenny.
Yeah, I think you're right, too. I think one thing that, you know, sports has kind of been to the forefront in this country in race relations. You go all the way back to, you know, Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier in baseball. And I think one thing that the country can learn from the sporting world is that you see all types of people working together towards a common goal. Now, whether you win or not, it's the effort that counts. And I think that you mentioned my cousin Doc, who's the coach of the Clippers, and he was very passionate in what he said the other day about being exhausted by what's been going on all these years. And, you know, I agree with them, of course. I mean, this is just, to me, you know, I'm older than him. And he pointed out, what did he say? He's been 58 years old, and he just wants to be a basketball coach. He doesn't want to go through all of this. And I just think that his father was a policeman. And his father was the type of policeman that people would gravitate towards. They weren't afraid of him. They weren't running away from him. His dad ran the local Little League in my mom's hometown where she grew up and where Doc grew up. Doc's given name, by the way, is Glenn. We all call him Glenn. We don't call him Doc. So,
is that true? The family calls him Glenn?
Yeah, we all do. That's his given name. Doc is a nickname that he got in basketball.
So, Kenny, give me your whole background with Doc and, like, age difference. Because it sounds like you saw him born and remember him in that. Like, you're old enough to remember the age difference.
Yeah, when I was playing baseball, Doc was in high school. And I would come with the Orioles through Chicago. And my mom grew up in Chicago. She had five sisters and a brother. So I had a lot of cousins. But my mom was the only one of her siblings to move away from Chicago. And I grew up in New York. My dad thought there was better opportunities in New York for jobs, and he ended up working in the post office for 30 years. So she was the only one. And I kind of knew my cousins, but I didn't really grow up around them. So when I came through Chicago, they were always asking for tickets, and my mom really handled it well. She would call her sisters and say, listen, let them play baseball. You know, only so many people can go to these games. You can't leave 26, 30 tickets. So so my mom really handled it. She kind of laid down the law. So when I would go to their houses, though, of course, they had great food. You know, I'd go to my grandmother's house, or I'd go to one of my aunt's house for dinner. And that included Doc's house, of course, or Glenn's house, of course. And when I went to his house, he showed me his room at his house, and in his room, he had stacks upon stacks of college brochures that wanted him to come play basketball at their school. And eventually he went to Marquette, and which wasn't too far away from Chicago. So he wanted to go close enough that his parents could come see him play. And eventually this turned into an NBA career of 13 years, and eventually a coaching career has been a lot longer than that. And he's one of the most respected coaches in the game. And I think that's one reason why people listen to him and what he has to say. I was very proud of him. I saw the clip in which he spoke about the killing of Mr. Blake in Wisconsin. And I just thought I was very – not the killing. He's hospitalized. I'm sorry. And I was very proud of Doc and what he had to say. We come from a strong family. Our grandfather was a city councilman in my mom's hometown of Maywood, Illinois. And when something had to be done, that was the man to see. I can recall when I was very young. Now, this was before Doc was born. We took a trip to Chicago to my mom and my grandfather's house, my grandmother's house. And that was the first time I ever saw somebody tell my mom to do something, and she did it. And that was my grandfather. So right away, I knew that this guy was pretty important. So he was very
almost like Earl Weaver, a little bit, kind of similar. Like same bit kind like, of authority figure.
Unfortunately, he had a stroke, and He was in the hospitalized, and I came through Chicago to play the White Sox. And after the game, I went to the hospital to see him. And this is getting towards the end. And when I walked in the room, a tear came to his eye. My grandmother was there, too. My grandmother had a good sense of humor. She said, he's just happy to see you. He can't speak to you, but and he's crying the tears of joy, but he's also might be crying because you hit 3 home runs against the White Sox today. And I said, but Grandma, the White Sox won both games. So that's a type of sense of humor my grandmother had. It was she lived to be 101 years old.
Wow.
And she said,
so you're going to be around a while, Kenny.
Oh,
you're going to be here a while.
Good genes. She said the reason she lived that long was good faith, a strong family, and a very, very strong friendships with people around her hometown. She was revered in her hometown. When we went to her funeral a few years back, they had 5 ministers do the eulogy.
Wow.
And one of them was my cousin, who was a minister as well. And he said that he knew he was my grandmother's favorite of all her grandchildren. He knew that, he said, she had one grandson in the major league. She had another one in the NBA, but I knew I was her favorite because she named her dog after me.
So, well, Kenny, jumping back to the one in the NBA, and that viral clip that went viral for Glenn or Doc, whichever you prefer. There were 2 moments in that video that maybe you can talk about that resonated with me. And I've watched that video 4 or 5 times now. There's something about that video that so many of us keep going back to. And there's a moment where he talks about, I watch a convention and people are talking about being afraid, yet we're the ones who are getting shot. We're the ones who are getting killed.
Yeah.
And then there's that moment near the end where he literally cries and he says, we keep loving this country.
Yeah.
But it doesn't love us back.
I mean, that was very strong. Also, he mentioned all we ask is just to live up to the Constitution. That's all. And when you read those words, you know, everybody's created equal. And, you know, that to me, like I said, I was very proud of him. You know, I just, I already was, but even more so after that, because he stepped out of his element. He wasn't a basketball coach at that time. He was just a caring human being who happens to be an American citizen like all of us. And I truly believe for our country to get better, we have to work as a team, as you know, to move our country forward, to give everybody the opportunities that are set forth in the Constitution. I just feel that it's maybe there's an awareness now that wasn't there before, because you see all kinds of people kind of rallying towards this goal now and getting out in the streets. No, I'm not for violence or anything like that. I protest is part of it. I mean, the original protest in this country was throwing the tea in the harbor in Boston. And where did that get us? That got us a whole country. You know, so I think to make this country even better, you should speak out or be willing to do so, or more, just get out there and voice your opinion with a vote. I mean, we got a big election coming up. Whichever way you decide to go, just go and do it. And just voice your opinion as an American to try and keep this country going forward.
Kenny, I want to jump in on the baseball side because I am a different generation than both of you. You know, you guys are more a little bit more advanced than I, and remember like Wallace and Vietnam and Nixon and walking on the moon. I was born in 68, so it's a little different. But baseball for me in the 70s, and I know it's, you know, my dad taught me baseball. My cousin's name's on the wall out in Chicago where your family came, right? So baseball for me was how I learned my lessons. It's how my dad said, grab the bag. It had all the helmets. My dad was the manager of the team. I was the bat boy. You know, this is fair. This is foul. This is right. This is wrong. That's a balk. That's cheating. You know, you're either safe or you're out. It's either a striker. It was a way to create structure. It was a way to hit the cutoff man. You had teammates. It was a way you had to, if I run around second base and get thrown out at third, I'm costing my team something. Yeah. And, you know, all of these life lessons that, like, when you're 4 or 5 years old and you're trying to figure out four balls, three strikes, you're trying to figure out math, but you're trying to figure out, whoa, 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 that's foul, that's fair. This is right, that's wrong. Baseball did that for me. I don't know what does that for young children in America anymore, where moms and dads and rights and wrongs, but there really is something about sports. And I know the way Don raised his family and his mom and the way his brothers, sports is he's a family of lacrosse champions. And but what sports has represented and how it's been used by the president now and the national anthem. And we're about to get into this with football next week because it's about to come back. And then the plague kind of taking sports out, and sports becomes this measurement, you know. And I thought the Doolittle quote, and if I got my phone here, it's my pinned tweet right now on Twitter, that sports is the let me make sure I get the exact quote. I want to make sure I read it right. Sports are the reward for a functioning society.
Yeah.
What do you think of that, Ken Singleton?
Yeah, I think, well, you're speaking of Sean Doolittle of the Nationals, and I think he is, well, first of all, he went to University of Virginia, so you know he has to be on the ball a little bit. So I just think that I agree with him. I think that sports and the rest of the entertainment world, too, for that matter, you know, you get to do things to enjoy yourself because you've worked hard. And when you come home from work and throw your feet up at the end of a hard working day and watch a ball game, whether it's baseball or basketball or football, lacrosse or whatever, I think that you feel like you've earned it. Now, I think what has happened, you know, during the time that all of this was shut down, I mean, everything, when there was a lockdown back in March and April, I think that people realize, you know, things aren't functioning right here. There's things missing in our life that we can't do. I think that, you know, maybe families had a chance to come together a little bit more, maybe had a chance to read a little bit more or learn more about yourself. But there was that vacuum there that needed to be filled. And as we're watching sports again, it's not quite the same because there's nobody in the stands. And I think that the fans play an integral part of what happens, certainly in baseball. You know, you feel the energy. As a former player, I tell you, you feel the energy of the people there. You feel it at home. They kind of drive you forward. You feel it on the road because you can turn all that negativity into a positivity and try and keep these people quiet. I just think that, once again, sports has a chance. I agree with Doolittle. I know he's not having a good year, and the Nationals aren't having the year they had last year. But as long as there's people like him in the game who are very, very thoughtful about what they say and what they do, I think that, baseball has a chance to move forward. And I think sports in general has a chance to move forward and kind of be an example for how you can, you know, work together, get this thing done. We got to get rid of this pandemic. I want people to be back in the stands. I want them to be able to go to a full ballpark and feel that energy, whether you're watching it on TV or whatever. I just think that there's that something missing right now. And hopefully, you know, we have some smart people, you know, scientists and doctors, and I know they're working on it. This is going to take some time. This is something that hasn't been seen in this country or in this world for 100 years. So, and this is a tough one, but sometimes you have to go through tough stuff in life.
Kenny, if we can jump back to the whole culture issue in sport.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think, you played 15 years in the bigs. You've been in locker rooms many, many more than that as a broadcaster. Can you take our listeners, and again, for those tuning in, we're with longtime Oriole legend and New York Yankee broadcaster Ken Singleton. As I said at the beginning of the show, one of my wife's two favorite Orioles, so she's jealously peeking in outside. But Kenny, can you take us into clubhouses over your years? Because I think of them as mini offices. You know, in those clubhouses, there's 35, 40 people. It's a good size, small business. And in my experience, there are all kinds of personalities and political beliefs and political, and I see you nodding.
Yeah.
How does all of that blend in the clubhouse? How do those differences get settled? And is it the same today as when you played, or is it different? There's a lot there.
Yeah, there's a lot there, Don. You know, I'm not into the clubhouses during, you know, the games or anything like that, or right after the games. But I can take you back to, you know, back when I was playing. Now, you're right. A lot of different people from all over the world. And I think even more so today than there was then. There weren't many Asian players back then in the major league. Now you have Asian players in the big leagues. I go back to that theme of the common goal. And I know that you're right. There's people who have different thoughts about politically or whatever. They have different thoughts about each other. But to be successful as a team, you got to put all that aside. And you have to work for it to get it done. I mean, being in the major leagues in competition, as tough as it is, the best that there is. I think one thing I will say, the manager of a team can really set the tone in a clubhouse. And I was fortunate enough to have Earl Weaver in Baltimore, and he was no nonsense. It was about winning and nothing else. If you had any gripes with anybody, his door was always open, but you were kind of afraid to go in there. So, because he would let you know in no uncertain terms what he expected of you. He was not afraid to embarrass anybody on the team in front of everybody else. And that comes from Jim Palmer, Eddie Murray, all the way down.
And by the way, that's very different now, right? Like when I was doing a book on management, that's not the way Joe Torre managed the Yankees 20 years ago, right?
You can't do that now, Nestor. You can't. The manager does not have the big power that he used to have when in Earl's day. Earl could I'll give you an example. When Eddie Murray made the team in 1977 and became Rookie of the Year, Hank Peters was a general manager, and he wanted Eddie to go back to the minor leagues at the end of spring training. He thought he needed more seasoning. Well, Earl told Hank Peters in no uncertain terms, if Eddie Murray's not on this team, I'm not going to manage the team. So needless to say, Eddie was on the team, and he became Rookie of the Year on his way to becoming a Hall of Famer. So Earl had a lot of sway as to what went on in the team, and everybody knew it. And that's why you didn't want to get on his bad side, even if it was just for 5 minutes. And he made you focus as a player. Every single day you're trying to do things the right way. I'll give you a prime example. We're playing a spring training game. And I think Mickey Rivers was with Texas, and he had a ball in between Al Bunbury and myself. And Bunbury got to the ball first up against the wall, but he was running away from the play, so he flipped the ball to me. He flipped it over my head. And, of course, Mickey Rivers, with his speed, he scored all the way. They gave him a triple and an error. So, anyway, we get back. I'm looking at Bunbury. I'm saying, you know what you did, didn't you? He's going to be waiting for us when we come off the field. And sure enough.
You wanted to go to Texas dugout. Billy Harper was over there, right?
I told Al. I said, B, when we go back to the dugout, you go in one end and I'll go in the other. And he can't get us both at the same time. So somehow, I forgot. I think he came to me first and he said, what are you guys doing out there? This is a clown show. He said, from now on, and you know, I can't use the words he used, but whoever picks up the ball throws the ball back in. And I'm looking at Al like, you got me in all this trouble because you felt like flipping a ball. And so that – This was early in my time in Baltimore. That never happened again.
By the way, I'm going to Robbie's first base. I'm finding Bunbury, and I'm going to have his side of the story on that.
Yeah, okay.
He's going to say that Ken was calling for the ball. Throw me the ball.
I was looking at the play. What is he going to do with it? And all this ball flying over my head. So, yeah, Earl was easily the best manager that I played for. He had insight, and he knew who could do what against what players on the other teams. One more example of that: we're facing Nolan Ryan, and of course, you guys remember Nolan. He threw, it seemed like 200 miles an hour. And we're playing a game in Baltimore. It's the bottom of the eighth inning. He's got like 14 strikeouts, and we're losing 3-0. And I'm not the next hitter, but I'm the hitter after that. I'm in the dugout, and I'm sitting next to Earl, and I said, Earl, he's throwing really hard. He's on tonight. I don't know if we can get him. So, but Earl knew that he had two players in the lineup could hit him well, Mark Belanger and Pat Kelly, the late Pat Kelly, but the late Mark Belanger too. So anyway, there's an error. Nolan walks a guy, and there's a base hit, and the bases are loaded. And I said to Earl, man, I don't know. He's pretty tough tonight. Earl looked at me, and he said, we got him right where we want him. And I'm thinking, what, are you crazy? Well, Pat Kelly was up, and Pat hit the next pitch for a grand slam. Wow. And we're winning 4-3. And as I'm going out to the dugout to the on-deck circle, Earl looks at me, and he winks. And he knew which players could do what, and he knew Pat Kelly could wear out Nolan Ryan.
And that was before analytics, Kenny.
No,
Earl was his own analytics.
I remember the game, and better than that, I think it's awesome that you brought up the great Reverend Pat Kelly, because he gave me baseball when I was a kid in 1979. Yeah. He's the only Oriole. Every night I went out, you never gave me a ball. None of you guys gave me. But Pat Kelly gave me the one baseball I ever had as a kid. Yeah. So there's your Jeff Mohler story for you there, Don.
Well, listen, I was going to say, I know I want to get back and do some more, particularly about athletes, outspokenness, athletes advocacy, but my grandsons would kill me if I didn't work in a couple of their questions. I noticed, Ken, you played basketball and baseball, and mm-hmm. all of my grandsons are multi-sport athletes, and they get pressure from time to time to specialize, and they resist it. And I wonder what your take is on multi-sport athletes versus the specialization that we see so much today.
Yeah, I agree that they should be playing multiple sports. I played basketball. In fact, I went to college on a basketball scholarship, but I knew I loved baseball more. To me, basketball was a way to keep in shape when springtime originally showed up. And I will tell you, Don, and I'll tell you, Nestor, the best shape I was ever in my life was when I was playing basketball and baseball. You know, basketball, it's constant movement. You're up and down that court. And, baseball is a little different. But I would say not only that, when you're a youngster playing baseball, people try and get you to specialize in one position. I think you should play as many as possible. That way, eventually, you will find out which one you like the best, and that's the one you can concentrate on as you get into your later teens. And eventually, maybe go off to college with a scholarship. I just think that I've seen examples of too many kids, particularly pitchers, that have just focused on that, pitching. And especially kids from the warmer weather states like California and Texas and Florida, they throw all year long. I don't know if you guys know this, but more than half the Tommy John surgeries are on teenage pitchers. That, we focus on the big leaguers who have it, but most of them are the young kids who just throw too much. And if they were playing other sports, they would give their arms a rest. But they were trying to focus and break the radar guns. And when I read that, it was in a book by Jeff Passan called The Arm. And I recommend that to anybody who has young kids who want to be pitchers, because he says some of these kids get abused by their coaches and they throw way too much. And eventually they end up in doctor's offices having Tommy John surgery at a very young age. And while Tommy John surgery is pretty successful, There are some people who just don't come back.
Right. So no, that's a shame. And I've seen that, Kenny. It's interesting. Yeah. Luckily, my grandchildren have had coaches who are pretty attuned to that pitch count and that. But we have played teams where, you know, they're running this kid out there for 100, 110 pitches.
Yes.
At 12, and I'm just shaking my head looking at my son like, what's happening? And I guess before we jump back to politics, my last question for them would be, because I can't have them yelling that they didn't ask a question. One of them is actually a switch hitter. One of them actually has Ken Singleton speed, so that's encouraging. Yeah. Okay, he's not Ricky Henderson, but he does know that you had a .388 on base percentage in your career. They would like to know when you went through those periods where you just weren't seeing the ball. What drill did you go back to over and over again to try to get out of the slump? What'd you work on?
Yeah, that's a good question. The thing I tried to do is concentrate on hitting the ball back through the middle. You mentioned the on-base percentage. That's why even when I wasn't hitting, I was going to play, because they all knew I could work counts, I could make pitchers work hard, and eventually I'd draw some walks. You know, for me, you know, 0-for-4 is a bad day, but 0-for-3 with a walk and a run scored, that's not quite as bad, you know. So that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to get on base and score runs. The whole idea as a hitter is to make contact. Don't swing at bad pitches, especially the higher level you get to. Pitchers realize you're going to swing at everything. They're going to throw you everything out of strike zone, let you get yourself out. Thought, Don, was if the ball is too hard to actually swing and hit, it's not a strike. And I will say this, that once the umpires realized I had a pretty good eye, I got the close ones. You know, the close ones would go my way. Rick Dempsey used to get so upset at me and say, when I take that pitch, it's always a strike. When you take it, it's a ball. And I said, because you swing at everything, and that's why they're going to call it a strike. The umpires know I'm locked in on the strike zone. I know what my strike zone is, and I'm going to get the close ones. You know, that's the way it was. And my first year in the minor leagues, I led the league in walks. And I think every level I went to in the minor leagues, every team I played for, I led that team in on-base percentage. And and when I got called up to the big leagues, I had been in AAA for 2.5 months, and I had my on-base percentage was 51%.
Well, so, Ken, to be in the major leagues for 15 years, Nestor, I looked at this stat 2 or 3 times to make sure I was seeing it correctly. Be in the major leagues for 15 years and get on base 4 out of 10 times. I don't know that anybody does that today when everybody's trying to hit 40 home runs. And I mean, that's an amazing stat, Ken.
There are some guys who are pretty good at it. I don't think anybody will ever approach Ted Williams. You know, I think he was 49% of the time he was on base in his career. That's amazing.
They pay him a lot of money to do that now, right?
No, now crazy. They won't.
Just to jog my memory, when you came over, I mean, despite us making, not us, but Moeller making comments about your quick speed, you were a leadoff hitter. I remember you being my favorite leadoff hitter for a while.
Yeah, and the reason being, when I came to spring training that year, Earl called me in the office, and I figured, I just got here. I can't be in trouble already. And he said, you're going to lead off this year. And remember, in Montreal, I already had a year where I drove in 100 runs and scored 100 runs and led the league in on-base percentage. But, see, that was the key for Earl, right? On-base percentage. He said, you walk a lot. Bobby Grich walks a lot. You're going to bat first. He's going to bat second. I said, Earl, I don't steal bases. He said, that's not the idea. The idea is to get on base for the other guys. My very first game, we played in Detroit. In fact, we got snowed out on opening day. We played the next day. It must have been about 37 degrees. It's cold as all get out. Jim Palmer pitched a 3-hit shutout. We won 10-0. My first at bat in the American League, I walked. Went to third on a base hit. Scored on a 3-run homer. This is in the first inning. So Earl knew what he was doing. So I come back to the dugout. He sticks his finger in my chest and he says, That's what the hell I'm talking about. Just get a bit.
Earl did not lack confidence, right?
See, Kenny's just glad that I'm old enough that I can remember you batted leadoff, and that I'm not just making that up for the kids. That's true.
I did. Yeah. You know, I think I stole 3 bases that year.
So. You hit like 29 home runs, as I remember, right?
Yeah,
like,
I didn't hit that many the first year.
Nestor, you've motivated my grandsons. Hey, Kenny, real quick, can we jump back to the athletic advocacy for a minute? Nestor, you talk about being born in 68. I remember. I was a freshman in college, and I remember clearly John Smith and Tommy Carlos. I'll never forget it when those black gloves go into the air. Yeah. I certainly remember and admired Bill Russell's outspokenness at a time, which really made him sort of odd man out because folks weren't doing that. And then Magic and Michael, they sort of stayed out of that fray pretty much. And yet now we fast forward – and LeBron and Doc Rivers and others and the WNBA, they're all out there. Give us sort of a historical perspective of athletic advocacy and where we are today and how you see that, whether it's important or not.
Yeah, well, it's important. I think we're all finding out it's important. And I think there's a lot of people, white people, have found out it's important too, because the athletes have started getting the backing here. You had the Commissioner Goodell in the National Football League say that we should have listened to Colin Kaepernick. But, right. Maybe we should have listened to him. Because while they were making it out about the flag and the country, that, disrespecting that, it wasn't really about that. It was about the police brutality and, they're getting tired of it and how this has gone on way too long. I think that, I have as much respect for this country and for the flag in general and what it means. My dad was a veteran. He fought in World War II. I think that I feel as though this is separate. This is separate. It has to deal with the country as a whole, and it's not about the flag. We all love our country. We all do. And you notice it when something comes up that we are threatened from abroad. We all get together and we're going to fight for the country. But we all have our differences within the country that maybe we should start working out that would make us all better and feel better about ourselves as a whole. I know when I see people around, people recognize me, and it's nice to be recognized and all that. But, I wonder if these people wouldn't recognize if I hadn't played for the Orioles, would they feel the same way? Yeah, and I just don't know. And I just feel as though everybody deserves a chance for somebody to say hello and have a good day. That's the way I feel.
Ken Singleton is here. Of course, the man, the myth, the legend, Baseball Yes Network. You probably run into him in the store in Hunt Valley because he's still living here. And, of course, with Don Martin. Last thing for you, because we haven't I haven't had a chance to rate the wall behind you. And since we're Zooming now and you have these incredible objects behind you, including it looks like Eddie, Frank, and you. And then I see Martina and Pam behind you. And I love Martina. I love Pam. Yeah. And then I see the uncut baseball cards behind you as well. And there's an Oriole team picture.
Yeah, and here's one. It's my daughter and I at our high school dance. She is since graduated from Penn State. She's in she's doing very, very well. Her degree was in astronomy, and she's way above me. That's this right here, very proud of these. These are baseball cards, if you will, of famous Negro League players, and. Some that people have heard of for sure, like Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson, but some that people may not have heard of, like Mule Suttles and Martin DeHago and players like that, who were certainly, they didn't get the opportunity to play in the major leagues. Now, Satchel did for a little bit.
Did you get that in Kansas City?
Say again?
Did you get that in Kansas City?
I actually found it. Somebody gave it to me. I think my brother sent it to me.
You've been to the hall in Kansas City. It's unbelievable. It looks like it came from there. Yeah.
Oh, if you ever get to Kansas City, Don, you just go down to Negro League Museum.
It is incredible.
It is
Know, we're very proud, Kenny, and I know you're a Baltimore County. And Nestor, I don't know if you've been, and if you haven't,
Took me over to Owings Mills.
Okay,
absolutely.
I was going to say, at the Owings Mills Library, right there out there, Ken, in the Metro Center, is the Maryland Negro League Baseball Museum.
Wow.
And it's worthy.
It's unbelievable.
Of being in Cooperstown.
No, it's a Cooperstown room. It really is. It's amazing.
Mr. Banks is just wonderful. Has just taken care of that. He used to have all this memorabilia, and Kevin Kamen has actually said they were talking about getting some room or where we could go in some rec center, and Kevin Kamen had said, wait a minute, this is spectacular. Let's put it in a public place that gets 1 million visitors a year, and it's on several floors. So whenever you're back in the county, Ken, swing by Owings Mills and check out the Maryland Negro League Baseball. And I would say that to all our listeners.
Is it open?
Oh, it's a part of – it's built into the library where the subway stop is at the end of the line.
Spectacular.
Literally right where, you know, Expectation is and, like, all the town center. You can park your car and walk right in. Alan and I took the elevator up and down. I have a Judy Johnson autograph on a Hagerstown Suns media guide because he was in the – you know, somehow it got to me, and I wanted to gift it. So – you know, I'm going to gift it. So it's
Judy Johnson's up here somewhere.
I'm not exaggerating, Ken. It is literally, if you saw this exhibit at Cooperstown, you would say, wow, that's a terrific, it's worthy of Cooperstown. That's how good this exhibit is and the people who take care of it.
I'll definitely get over there.
Owings Mills, there we go. We got a nice little plug for something people didn't even know about based on something over your shoulder in the wall. Kenny, thanks for making time, as always. You're always gracious in returning a call. And I know it's hard to get you off the golf course, especially this time of year.
Yeah. although I'll be working. I'll be working coming up soon here. You know, the Orioles and the Yankees are getting together pretty soon, so I'll be working.
Is there anything you were saying on baseball on the way out? I mean, just this has been hard for me to watch. And obviously the Oilers had dealt all their players away, as probably expected. But it's a weird little pennant race, isn't it, for Padres and the White Sox and different places?
Yeah. I think you guys will agree with me. The team that wins this year will have really earned it, not so much as what they've done on the field, but also what they've done off the field. And just to keep their unit together and keep themselves healthy and keep the whole organization just flowing. I think that once this is all done, you're going to see baseball teams that are really, really solid units. And that also has to do with how they've come together on this racial divide issue. And I think that you've seen teams come together as well in that regard. You've seen postponements because they didn't want to play. And I think that not only the pandemic, but that's also become a uniting issue for baseball teams and maybe in the other sports as well.
No, it's been amazing. Kenny, do you broadcast? I mean, I watch the Masson broadcast, and obviously they don't send Scott Garceau and Ben or whoever's with him on the road, and it's a challenge for them. They're broadcasting road games from Hunt Valley, and you know, fly ball, it's hard for them to judge fly balls. I mean, I really give them a pass on that because it's not easy calling a game. Not. Are you on the road, or are you calling it remotely as well?
No, there are no visiting broadcasters this year. So when I do this game with the Orioles and the Yankees, in fact, even when the Orioles are in New York, if I'm working, I'll still be home in Maryland. I don't have to go anywhere this year. And, you know, it's all done by Zoom. And you're right. It's not as easy. You always seem to be a beat behind. But you really have to recognize what's going on in the game. And maybe my experience will help there.
It looks really, really hard.
Ken Singleton, our guest. We're going to bid him adieu. I think we lost our Zoom with Kenny there. It's been a great chat. I want to give thanks to all of our sponsors here, our friends at DeHarka, and the Caramel Crunch Salted Caramel Ice Cream with chocolate-covered honeycomb toffee. Our friends at DeHarka, as well as our friends at State Fair, Fadley's. You can ship those crab cakes anywhere in the world. And, of course, our friends at Moeller and Gary Realty. And Jeff Moeller, we're going to bring him back on a program. We launched the new Baltimore Positive next week to talk about all things real estate. My thanks to Yes Broadcaster, Maryland resident, Oreo forever, even though he's watched those damn Yankees win championships last quarter of a century. We are WNST.net, AM 1570. On behalf of Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, I am Nestor Aparicio. We are local, safe, calm, and Baltimore Positive.